So there's a one of the kind of more contemporary Buddhist teachers that was asked at one point to describe this world. And he thought a bit, and his response was, lost in thought. And I thought that was really apt, that really the Buddhist teachings are that we spend a huge amount of our time thinking about the future, the past, commenting, judging, fantasizing, distracting, and very little in that quality of here-ness that when we touch, we cherish. When we're lost in thoughts, we're really disconnected from a real sense of aliveness. And we're disconnected from a real sense, viscerally, of love. And we're disconnected from a kind of creativity. Emerson says, within each of us is the soul of the whole. When it breaks through our intellect, it is genius. When it breathes through our will, it is virtue. When it flows through our affections, it is love. The soul of the whole. And so the understanding in the Buddhist teachings is that our thoughts can be helpful, but when we're lost in them, they obscure the soul of the whole. We forget that what we might call holiness. We forget that which is sacred. We're lost. So what I'd like to do is explore in a very direct way how we awaken from the trance of thought. And it's something I try to do regularly in here because we are so addicted to thinking, which is natural and not necessary. Okay. So, as I mentioned, I was at this 8-day retreat up at the Insight Meditation Society, and there were many flavors of transformation for people in that 8 days of quietness. But the common denominator was a kind of sense of homecoming, where there was enough quieting of that mental busyness. There was the gaps where that sense of holiness, the soul of the whole, that light could shine through, a kind of a homecoming of here-ness and cherishing that. And one woman on about day 6 or 5, actually it was Valentine's Day, wrote an experience that I want to share with you. She says, I'm a clinical psychologist and I work in a maximum security women's prison. 2 weeks ago, I sat in a session with a client who is serving a life sentence. She will be eligible for parole in 30 years if she makes it that long. I asked her what she would want to do if she ever made it back to the free world, and she replied simply, I want to touch a tree. Today, during walking meditation, I decided to walk in the forest. There are thousands of trees in the forest, though I wouldn't have known it. I was so wrapped up in my own mind that I scarcely noticed my feet moving one in front of the other. I was lost in a futuristic hypothetical argument with my father. I said all the things right, had the perfect responses, and was feeling justified in my anger. Just when my emotions began to climax, I tripped, fell flat on my face in the snow. I looked around me and all I could see was that there were trees, trees, trees. Had they been there a moment ago? If they had, I hadn't noticed. There was a perfect climbing tree just off the path with short, thick branches sticking out from all sides. It had been years since I had climbed a tree, but I could tell this one was sturdy and easy to climb. 10 feet above the ground, my conversation with my client came rushing back to me and I was filled with sadness. I doubted she would ever live long enough to touch her tree. In that moment, I vowed to bring the memory of this tree back to her. I ran my fingers over the bark, mossy and cold from the snow. I felt the sturdiness of the branches beneath my feet. I took off my glove and traced the contours of the trunk with my fingers. And in a moment, almost too cliche, I'm embarrassed to say, for even my California roots, I hugged the tree and said, I whispered, I love you. That's when it hit me. Only moments ago, I was walking by this tree without even a passing glance, and now I was standing in it, hugging it, and whispering sweet nothings. I guess waking up is not all about achieving instant clarity or suddenly dissolving the boundaries of the ego. It's about waking up to the subtle moments as they happen and appreciating the wonder of it all. After all, for most of us, if we really want to touch a tree, it's not too late. We still can. Sometimes we, you know, really wonder, well, so what is our purpose, or how come we practice? And we practice to make each moment real life. We have this habit of kind of disregarding the moment, like we're on to something else. And Thich Nhat Hanh puts it that we miss our appointment with life. And if there's anything that when I work with clients or students, if there's a kind of a despair, it's that sense of kind of, you know, skimming the surface, like trying to get somewhere and in some deep way recognizing we're really not arriving here. You know, we're holding back our love, we're holding back our presence, we're just in that trance, lost in thoughts. We're preoccupied. That means occupied with something, so there's not room for the life that's here. So meditation is really training in seeing that conditioning and cutting through it so that we can arrive here. And we are motivated because everything we really long for can only be experienced here. We spend a lot of time thinking that we have to get other things and it's down the road. But if we really pay attention, it's only and always here. And to postpone learning to arrive here is to postpone living. And we sense that. That's where the sadness comes, or the grief. Like that in some way, these moments pass by and we really have not learn to be here and embrace what's happening. So the main way we leave, because this is the challenge in meditation is that we have this huge conditioning to keep exiting. Have you noticed? We come here, we say, okay, we're going to be here, be with the breath. If you notice a thought, come on back, and whoosh, we're gone over and over again. And that's here when we're even intending to be here. You know, how is it during the day? How was it for you today? You know, how many moments was there a real sense of this heart or this breath? Or real listening, taking in the other that we were with? Are seeing, you know, the winter sky that was blue with the silhouette of the trees. I mean, how many moments? For most of us, it was an idea of having to get things done and a timeline we were on and a sense of a self on its way. Figuring out, worrying, planning, trying to accomplish. And it's not like we don't need to plan and figure and try to accomplish. It's just, are we lost in it? Do we have a choice to pause? Can we arrive if we're with someone and they need our attention? Like really let our agenda go? Can we respond? As one Zen master said, the whole purpose of this life is to respond appropriately. To be able to show up, to make our appointment for life with life. So meditation is actually very revealing because it shows us just how habitually we leave, how hard it is to stay here. And if we want to say, well, how come it's so hard? It's meant to be. I mean, we are designed to leave. And that's reassuring. So we don't think that we are the one that happens to be a bad meditator. It's universal. If you sit here and think, well, I'm the one schlep here that's obsessing, and then everybody else is just, you know, no way. We're all leaving. It's just happening. So how does this happen? If you take kind of the evolutionary big picture, one way of understanding is that awareness takes form. That's existence. Awareness is taking form. And its sense of awareness identifies with the form, the temporary form. And it forgets the source. Awareness forgets itself in a way, you might say. It's like Rumi put it, whatever comes into being gets lost in being, drunkenly forgetting its way back. Okay, so there's awareness, takes form, gets identified solely with the form and forgets the source, the bigness, the vastness. And that every form, to be successful, has to sense this boundary of outside and inside and defend and enlarge itself and protect. So for complex forms like humans, thinking is our main strategy. And the thinking ends up solidifying that sense of identification. I'm a separate self. I'm here. And the more we think, the more there's a sense of me, self, you out there, have to defend, have to protect, have to get. The more thinking, the more sense of separateness. So the benefit of our thinking is that it's the most incredible mechanism for thriving and surviving. We absolutely need it. It's also creative and allows us to communicate. The challenge is that we get addicted to it, and it's not supposed to be the end of the story. We get addicted to thinking and forget to pay attention to the awareness that's here. So I sometimes describe it like we're the spacesuit self. We're spending so much of our time thinking and going after what we want and avoiding what we don't want that we're identified with that whole mechanism of wanting, fearing, and thinking. And we forget what we are. So take a moment. Let's just say, well, what are thoughts? What is this mechanism we get so lost in, where we're believing this reality of small and separate? And so just let's check it out. I want you to just close your eyes for a moment. Let this be a pause and just feel yourself here. And for a moment, just reflecting a little on today and maybe recalling an incident that was particularly enjoyable or difficult or just stood out to you. And take some time to remember it. Reviewing an experience. And then recognize this reviewing, these memories as thoughts. And just look closely. What are they? Do they thoughts show up as images? Are they sound bites? Is it like a still frame? Or more like a movie? It's part of becoming mindful of thoughts is really noticing. So what are they? We all have our own brand, but for most of us it's some combination of images, sound bites, of course, accompanying feelings. You can come back when you like, opening your eyes. But basically, thoughts are representations of the world. They're a map. Sometimes a useful map, sometimes not. But they're no closer to the real thing. Your memory of that experience or any thought about anything, it's like if you took, it's not any closer than if you took a photo of a tree and said the photo was the tree. I mean, the photo isn't an actual living tree that's with leaves budding or turning colors or falling off or swaying in the breeze. Maybe smells of blossoms or wet wood or decomposing leaves. It's not the real thing. It's just a snapshot that represents it. A t-shirt I wore for many years had on it, meditation, it's not what you think, you know. I thought that was great. So we spend a lot of our time trying to, you know, continuously putting out, our brains throw up this map of the world, and we're navigating using this map, and we take it to be real. That's where the trouble comes. It's like, it's said that thoughts are a terrible master and a wonderful servant. They're a terrible master when we believe our thoughts to be real. They're not just a tool, a representation. We believe the terrible beliefs that we have about ourselves or the world. We just spend time in our mind with the what's wrong. I often say that our minds are like this TV set with different channels. You know, we're trying to beam into the world, and we have this different channels of pictures and images. And, you know, how many of them are Discovery Channel? Like, how many of them are really useful? Really? And we look, and there's one person said we have 80,000 thoughts a day, something like 80,000, and 95% of them we had yesterday. It's like we're in this familiar cocoon of thoughts. And what happens? How do they create suffering? We think they're real, and in the moments of thinking and believing the thoughts, we're not awake in our body, our senses aren't open, we're not feeling our heart. Somebody today reported a bumper sticker on the Beltway, sent me an email about it. Here's what it said. If you lived in your heart, you'd be home by now. Isn't that great? Who's here from the fundraising committee? Don't you think we should have that bumper? Yeah. What do you guys think? Good bumper. Would you guys buy it if we had that bumper? Excuse me, a little IMCW business here. I like that. Yeah. So here's, the Buddha basically said that we are shaped, created, and led by our thoughts. And it's amazing to see how much power they have. They're just habitual ways of representing the world, and yet they create our entire experience. Do this, say that, plan this, obsess, judge. Again, let's to play with this a little. Just close your eyes, close your mind. Shut it down. Lock it away. Yeah. Okay, so breathing. And then just produce the word trouble in your mind, trouble. And whatever images or thoughts come with trouble. Notice what that's like. Trouble. Just aware of it. Trouble, the idea, the feelings. And a few full breaths to just shift gears. And then the word kindness. Again, just mentally repeat the word inwardly, whatever comes up around kindness. And just notice the effect of a word, a thought, And how rarely we choose. Part of wise reflection is just to begin to notice, does this thought create suffering? Does this thought move me towards freedom? Thinking can be very skillful. With the metta, or loving kindness practice, we're beginning to run thoughts through the mind that remind us of goodness, of what we care about. That kind of creates an inner atmosphere that's very conducive to freedom. And yet, how many times are our thoughts about what's wrong? If you'd like, you can open your eyes. We live in a kind of a swim of a wash of cultural thoughts and myths about how we need more of this and what's going to go wrong, what's around the corner, what we need to cooperate with. We live with internalized stories about what's wrong with us. So somebody sent me this recently. At a Sunday school, they were teaching how God created everything, including human beings. Little Johnny seemed especially intent when they told him how Eve was created out of one of Adam's ribs. Later in the week, his mother noticed him lying down as though he were ill, and she said, "Johnny, what's the matter?" Little Johnny responded, "I have a pain in my side. I think I'm going to have a wife." So we have all these ideas of how it is and what's going to happen. And unfortunately, a lot of our ideas are, if I do make a mistake, I'll get punished. I won't be liked. If I reveal this, I won't be loved. We have very deep beliefs about ourselves. I can never really be close to another person because they'll find out, you know, what I'm really like. People will always reject me. So these run very deep, and we're believing them, and they create our entire experience of the world. When our deep beliefs, we believe, they become the filter for everything. Mahatma Gandhi said, "Your beliefs become your thoughts become your words become your actions become your habits. Your habits become your character becomes your destiny." So I'm spending some time on this portion of the talk because there is no freedom, there is no genuine happiness until we wake up from the trance of our thoughts, from believing the thoughts are reality, and begin to discover the presence that's really our home. There is no freedom unless we get the knack of waking up out of the kind of grip of thoughts. In the most basic way, even thoughts that are benign thoughts are not the living reality. They obscure it. So they can be useful. But as William James in the West and every mystic from every tradition has pointed out, it's not until we open into the presence and immediacy that's right here that we can see reality as it is. Our thoughts can't tell us about it. It's bigger than the thoughts. So the deal is that forgetting, getting identified with thoughts, believing in the story of a small self, and believing in a timeline and that we're on our way, it's all part of our evolutionary makeup. Okay, so that's the truth. To not kind of bash ourselves for being so caught up. And the good news is that isn't the end of the story. Awareness wants to realize itself. There's a kind of a call for homecoming, a longing in our hearts, an interest that's seeking truth. And it's awareness kind of calling us home that wants to wake up out of thoughts, even though we're addicted and even though it's what I call a false refuge that we're really very involved with, reliant on. There's something in us that wants to wake up to something bigger. So our inner wisdom, this awareness, draws us to pathways that wake us up out of the trance. Every one of us. We wouldn't be here otherwise. We want to recognize what we are. We want to come home to that luminosity, that presence, that heart. And there's all these different ways. I mean, we find it in nature. It kind of helps us to step out of our ideas and into the living world. And we find it in prayer and in dancing and in lovemaking and in silence and in music. So we have a lot of ways that help us to kind of step out of the domination of thinking mind and into the living presence that's here. The mind is constantly trying to figure out what page it's on in the story of itself. Close the book. Burn the bookmark. End of story. Now the dancing begins. I like that one. So we're not trying to vanquish thoughts. We're just trying to have the mindfulness to choose. We're trying to develop this capacity to recognize that we're more than what any thought can tell us about ourselves. So just take a moment, just close your eyes and listen to the sound of the bell. And let the sound of the bell be an invitation to pause and to sense the difference between thinking and being here. If right now there's a thought, how long is this little exercise going to last, or what's going on here, whatever, you can again just breathe and feel yourself here. And notice the difference between what's actually happening. Sounds. Sensations. The aliveness that's here. And any thought. Sri Nisargadatta says, the real world is beyond our thoughts and ideas. We habitually see it through the net of our desires, divided into pleasure and pain, right and wrong, inner and outer. To see the universe as it is, you must step beyond the net. It is not hard to do so, for the net is full of holes. So now let's explore a little. You can open your eyes, but we're going to be going in and out. What helps us to release the grip of thinking? What helps us to really arrive more here? And our gateway is awake in a sensory way. When we're listening, when we're feeling our bodies, when we're anchored in our senses, open senses, then the thoughts can come and go. We can notice them. We can use them when they're useful. But we've established a space of presence that's bigger than the thoughts. Which is why at the beginning of all our meditations, there's some guidance to hearness. Come here. Notice the sounds here, the sensations here. So that becomes our real kind of home base in a broad way. And then many of us might take a particular sensation of the breath or something to help us not only arrive, but maybe settle and deepen attention. So the practice to wake up out of thoughts, I sometimes call remindfulness. It's to notice, okay, it's the given as we're going to leave, and we notice that we've left. And then with a real quality of friendliness, because to be at war with thoughts just creates the seeds of more division and more thoughts. Okay, friendliness. With friendliness, we just notice it and then reawaken to what's here. Not push it away. It might still be going on some. Or we might feel the after flavor of the thought. Now, when they're very sticky, I sometimes encourage people to note a little. Oh, fantasizing. Oh, planning. Figuring out. Or if it has a theme that's a real recurrent one, you might even name the theme. What's wrong with so-and-so? You know, I call it the top 10 hits, you know. Just name it. Because what happens is if you name it and really recognizing, oh, that's what's happening, there's not so much identification with it. You don't believe it if you recognize it. Mindfulness dissolves identification. Sometimes I encourage people to kind of put a picture frame around the thought to really get, oh, thought. Ah, know what's really here. See, you start distinguishing. Because otherwise there's a real kind of, it's almost hypnotic. It feels like this is real. So that's the fundamental practice. To notice, if you need to, or it's helpful to note or put a picture frame. And then again, reawaken to exactly what's going on right here. The attitude, which I think is critical, is that we're choosing what's real. There's this longing and caring about, I'd rather be with what's real than some notion. One of my teachers, Joseph Goldstein, said, really the question is, do I want to think or be free? I like that either or, just as a way to cut through. That in this moment, there's nothing worth thinking about. There might be another time, and wise reflections, really helpful. But the most profound training, can we wake up out of that trance of thought? Can we develop that knack of noticing and arriving here? Okay, let's just pause. A lot of thinking about thoughts tonight. Stop. Just hearness. Senses wide open. Totally awake. Just this, right here. When you'd like, opening your eyes, but staying here. You can open your eyes and still feel your body and still be listening to sound. We sometimes compartmentalize our meditation. So when I'm sitting still with my eyes closed, that's meditating. And then all of a sudden, and then we're off in this trance of thinking and kind of drifting. And see if you can stay. So now what do we do when the thoughts are charged? What we call the repeating visitors that just keep coming back again and again. And that is a sign that something is asking for attention, something energetic, emotional, real in our bodies and hearts. So the idea is not to vanquish thoughts and just listen to sound. The idea is to wake up from the mental story and open to the living experience that wants our acceptance. Okay? So the practice then is to notice the thought, sense the charge, and then just to inquire into the body. So what's happening? What wants attention? Right here, what wants attention? We'll just try it out for a moment. So again, the eyes are closed. Just there's no magic to closing your eyes other than it helps you to reconnect internally some. Makes it a little easier. Taking a moment to think of something that's happened recently where you felt some judgment or resentment towards somebody. Not something intense, not where you got into a murderous rage, but, you know, where there was just some energy there, judgment, resentment. Then let your mind remember what was happening, what you felt was wrong or unfair, not treated right, maybe how this has been a pattern. What you're believing about that person or about how that person is thinking of you. Maybe that they're thinking of you in a diminishing way. Now again, being aware of the fact of thinking, of rerunning a story. So there's just a gentle noticing, okay, the judging story. And open into what's happening here in your body, especially if the judgment's a strong one, just to feel your heart and your throat and your belly. Just breathe with what's here in your body. Maybe you sense some fear or hurt or an angry energy in your body. So kindly breathe with. And just noticing the difference between being in the thoughts of wrongness and opening the senses to what's actually happening here in your body, in your heart. And include in your mind the sense of this room and that several hundred others are remembering and having stories, judgmental stories, and also feeling into their bodies. So you really sense, okay, thoughts flying around in my mind and other people's minds, and then this living experience in our bodies. To not take it so personally. It's not my judgment, it's just judging thoughts. Or as one of my teachers says, judging mind, judging. Sometimes it's described at retreats that how useful it would be if we could have like a loudspeaker where everybody's thoughts were being broadcast so we could not take them so personally. Yeah. Okay, so you can open your eyes now. It's a real breakthrough. When we begin to say, I don't have to believe my thoughts. Okay, here's the story of wrongness. But I can start going to where the real healing is. And the only possibility for healing is by feeling what's happening in the body. So the gift the gift of awakening from the trance is that when we're in it, our senses are closed off and we're not connected to our full aliveness. I mean, if we really sense what is it that matters, in one way, it's to live the life fully, to not miss out. And so this waking up from the trance a little bit when we sit and meditate and through the day, more and more moments and stretches are actually, we're here. We're here for the life. We can actually listen and feel the energy of being alive. And like the woman at the retreat, you know, if we really want to touch a tree, we still can. If our children are around and we really want to listen and let them feel our presence, we still can. And if they're grown up, we still can. As long as we're on the earth, it's not too late to come out of our minds into our senses and really be able to respond to our world with presence and care. It's hard to register how much our idea of a future, that we're on our way somewhere, interferes with being fully here. That there's some leaning forward that stops us from really sitting here on the seat of the present. I sometimes do a kind of a self-reflection where I say, okay, I'm going to die in a couple of minutes. What matters? And like there's no future. Absolutely no future. Very powerful. If there's really a sense of there's no future, what matters is being present and loving and totally surrendering into that, inhabiting that. No future. When there's no future, when we really absolutely open to hear, there's a sense of a mystery that we can't control, but that is really what we are. We open into that soul of the whole. This is D.H. Lawrence. He says, when we get out of the glass bottles of our ego, when we escape like squirrels turning in the cages of our personality and get into the forests again, we shall shiver with cold and fright, but things will happen to us so that we don't know ourselves. Cool, unlying life will rush in, and passion will make our bodies taut with power. We shall stamp our feet with new power, and old things will fall down. We shall laugh, and institutions will curl up like burnt paper. So there's a real quality of aliveness. There's a quality when we're willing to live in don't know mind, not try to figure things out so much. There's a sense of wonder that rather than just labeling things, trying to find where we are in the page of our life, there's this kind of open-eyed sense. It's like Rachel Carson, the great naturalist, put it. She says, a child's world is fresh and new and beautiful, full of wonder and excitement. It is our misfortune that for most of us, that clear-eyed vision, that true instinct for what is beautiful and awe-inspiring, is dimmed and even lost before we reach adulthood. If I had influence with the good fairy who is supposed to preside over all children, I should ask that her gift to each child in the world be a sense of wonder so indestructible that it would last throughout life. So this is our practice here, to reconnect with the aliveness and the wonder and the mystery that's here when doesn't have the overlay of conceptual mind. In the deepest way, the Buddha taught that true wisdom arises in the silent awareness that simply experiences. True wisdom arises in the silent awareness that simply experiences. So we practice by quieting some, by opening to that space and that silence that just simply recognizes what's happening and opens to it with care. So let's just sit for a couple of moments together again. Listening to the life that's here. Feeling what's arising. Allowing experience to live through us just as it is. May our hearts and minds awaken to the presence, the light, and the love that is our true nature. May we inhabit that presence and love and express it in a way that is of benefit to all beings.
The teaching you have received has been freely offered. If you would like to contact the Insight Meditation Community of Washington to make a donation or to learn more about our programs, please visit our website at www.imcw.org.